On this episode of the Practical Guidance Podcast Labor and Employment Series, we hear from attorney Jonathan Mook. John is a partner with the Labor and Employment Group of the firm DeMuro Ginsburg in their Alexandria, Virginia office. Mr. Mook is a nationally recognized authority on the Americans with Disabilities Act and is an author of two treatises published by Lexis and its subsidiaries. Today we will be looking at the ADA and where it intersects with long-term COVID cases and employment. We'll be discussing what employers should be doing as they're faced with long-term COVID in the workplace and consider recent litigation in the area. I'm your host, Kevin Hilton. I'm an attorney with LexisNexis. To learn more about LexisNexis Practical Guidance Research Solutions, visit lexis.com. Lexis's Practical Guidance gives you insights to support what you do. John, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with me for the Practical Guidance podcast today. I wonder if you'd just start by telling our listeners a little bit about your practice.
Kevin, let me thank you for inviting me to appear on this podcast. I'm a partner in the boutique litigation firm of DeMuro Ginsburg in Alexandria, Virginia, home of the Rocket Docket, if we've got some litigators out there. And we litigate in not only in Virginia federal and state courts, but also in D.C. and Maryland. My practice concentrates in the area of employment law and particularly the ADA. I authored two legal treatises for Lexis, both on the ADA. One is ADA Employment Rights and Employee Obligations, and the other is ADA Public Accommodations and Commercial Facility.
Well, I appreciate your expertise and time today, and we'll be linking to your writings. We're going to be speaking today about some of the nuances specific to long COVID and the challenges that it poses to employers. I wonder if we could just start by having you clarify what is currently being considered long COVID within the workplace.
Well, the CDC has defined long COVID as being a new or recurring or ongoing health problems experienced at least 4 months after an individual has been infected with COVID-19. And those symptoms that may result from these health problems range from brain fog, headaches, heart palpitations, mood swings, lightheadedness, to maybe more serious autoimmune conditions that damage or may be damaging a person's internal organs. And getting a little bit more into the weeds here, there are three different subtypes of long COVID that have been identified. The first is the respiratory symptoms that someone may have for an extended period of time. That's either chest pain or shortness of breath or heart palpitations. Some neurological impact, that's the brain fog and fatigue, headaches. And then third is, again, this autoimmune reaction where a person's internal organs may be attacked. And at least the science here, one thing I want to emphasize is this is not just something you may read on the internet that's scary. The science here that pretty well determined that long COVID is real. And in fact, according to some studies that were published this summer in The Lancet, people who are infected with COVID may have an increased risk for up to 2 years of experience different types of brain disorders. Again, brain fog, chemo brain, maybe even psychosis or dementia. At this point, although the CDC and the National Institutes of Health and various medical journals and doctors have recognized long COVID, the real problem here is that there's no established verification or medical tests that can confirm that somebody has long COVID. It's basically an individual reporting various symptoms over this lengthy span of time that the person is experiencing by which long COVID is diagnosed. So again, this is an area that it's real, but we don't have any specific medical tests that, you know, as a result of that test, the medical profession can say, yes, you've got long COVID, or no, you don't have long COVID. But, you know, and the NIH is now conducting a multi-million dollar study of long COVID because it certainly recognizes that it is real. But again, there are these unknowns in terms of particularly how do you test for it? What are the specific causes? And what are specific treatments? At this point, we have vaccines for COVID-19, but we don't have any specialized or specific treatments for long COVID.
At this point, is long COVID legally considered to be a disability?
Like other aspects of the ADA, it all depends, because the definition of disability under the ADA is a kind of a tripartite test that depends upon various factors. As many of our listeners probably know, under the ADA, a disability, one can have an actual disability, which is a physical or mental impairment that substantially limits a major life activity. One can have a record of such a disability, or one can even be regarded as disabled, such that even though a person doesn't meet the definition of actual disability, that a person, that an employer, for example, may regard an individual as disabled if an employer takes an adverse job action on the basis of an actual or perceived physical or mental impairment, even if that impairment doesn't rise to the level of substantially limiting a major life activity in actuality. If the employer perceives the person as having a medical impairment and takes an adverse job action, that individual will be protected under the regarded as prong. And in fact, there are a number of cases where the courts have said that a plaintiff's lawsuit may continue where the plaintiff has alleged that a person, that the plaintiff got COVID, not even long COVID, that the employer then shortly thereafter terminated the plaintiff, alleges, due to having been infected with COVID. So there can be coverage under the ADA, even if a person is not diagnosed with long COVID, if an employer takes an adverse job action on the basis of an employee actually or perceived to have been just infected with COVID-19.
For clients who have long haulers, who what do employers need to do in order to be compliant at this point?
I think the first rule of thumb under the ADA is certainly do not ask an employee if that employee has long COVID. You know, it's one of these aspects that employers are not supposed to make a medical inquiry of their employees. So let's say an employer has an employee who was infected with COVID-19. The employee comes back to work. The employer should not ask that employee, well, do you have any symptoms of long COVID? That's going to get the employer in trouble. But what usually occurs, and one that really triggers the whole panoply of requirements under the ADA, is where, let's say, you had an employee who went out with COVID-19, stayed out for maybe a few weeks, tested negative for the requisite period of time, came back to work, and is starting to have problems doing the job, doing the various functions of the job. And that employee comes, usually it may be to the manager or to the HR department, and says, you know, I'm having some difficulties here. I had COVID-19, but I'm still sort of feeling some effects. You know, oftentimes it presents itself in the workplace as having fatigue. People get tired easily. They can't concentrate. They're getting some brain fog. You know, they can't do the type of maybe more sophisticated analytical requirements for a job and asks for some type of accommodation, some type of change in the way that the employee has done the work in the past, or some type of help. And that is something that is going to trigger what practitioners usually call the ADA interactive process. And that's basically where an employer then can request medical documentation from the employee about the nature of the employee's health condition. The employee provides that medical documentation, and let's say the documentation is that the employee's doctor has diagnosed the employee with having various symptoms, which indicate that the employee has long COVID. The employer can always seek additional information if that medical information provided by the employee is sketchy or unclear. But let's say the employer does get sufficient medical information that, you know, potentially this individual does have a physical or mental impairment. Let's say the effects of COVID-19 are still lingering, that substantially limits a major life activity of the employee. And usually in the employment situation, it's going to be fatigue, ability to concentrate, ability to think, things such as that sort. And, you know, if those symptoms and the impact of those symptoms is affecting the person's ability to perform job tasks, in many circumstances, I think at least that individual will be able to make out a prima facie case, at least, that the individual is disabled under the ADA, and then potentially entitled to various reasonable accommodations. So dealing with long COVID in the workplace is very similar to dealing with other types of physical or mental impairments in the workplace under the ADA. There's not a different way of approaching it under the ADA. It's the same interactive process that an employer needs to go through. And, you know, finally, if the employee appears to have long COVID, which is disabling under the statute, substantially limits a major life activity, then the employer needs to consider various reasonable accommodations. And given the nature of how long COVID expresses itself, you know, in the workplace with fatigue, ability to concentrate, you know, the most likely accommodation an employee is going to want and that an employer may be obligated to provide is to telework. And we've all experienced that for, I guess, the over 2 years because of COVID 19 pandemic, not specifically due to long COVID, but due to COVID-19. So you may well have an employee who has come back physically to the workplace and now is seeking to return to telework due to experiencing long COVID. So telework is probably the most common type of request that an employee will ask for in order to accommodate that symptoms arising from long COVID. And in the last 2 years, I've been advising employers about telework as an accommodation. It has been a 180-degree change from what it was, let's say, 4 years ago. Four years ago, pre-COVID, telework was viewed by the courts in particular as being an unusual accommodation, one that would not often need to be made, because 4 years ago, most work was performed at the workplace. Employees had to physically be present. Now that has changed, particularly with employees who work in an office environment, that they can telework, and they certainly have been teleworking, many of them for over 2 years. So telework has become much more routine. And even though we have this back to the office movement, Employers now need to seriously consider allowing an employee to continue to telework. And the employer, in order to deny telework, is going to need to be able to marshal specific documented facts as to why that employee could not continue to work from home or to return to telework if the employee has more recently returned to the office. And you know that what those facts are is going to really depend upon the specific situation of the nature of the workplace, the nature of the work, the problems the employee is experiencing. You know, maybe the employee has fatigue and asks to work to resume teleworking, but maybe the employer could, if that is not an easy accommodation for the employer, could work out an alternative arrangement for the employee to, let's say, take breaks during the day, to work part-time, to telework maybe 2 days a week or 3 days a week, but come to the work site, the other days of the week. So maybe there are alternative arrangements that the employer can discuss with the employee rather than just simply granting just return to telework full time. But again, it's going to depend upon the specific situation.
Have there been a fair number of lawsuits that have arisen recently about this, or has it not been too many yet? I know there hasn't been a lot of time with it to have evolved.
We're starting to see some lawsuits being filed, both by the EEOC and by private plaintiffs, because employees need to go through the administrative process, either through a state agency, Human Rights Commission, or through the EEOC. It takes a little longer for some lawsuits to end up actually in court, and along the way, many get settled. I think we're going to start seeing a number of these cases being filed. Oftentimes for employers, it's often less expensive to grant the accommodation than it is to litigate a case.
Right.
Now, there is one case, I think, that is maybe of interest to our listeners. It's Thomas versus Bridgeport Board of Education. And that's a case in Connecticut where the district court dismissed a teacher's claim that the school that she taught at violated the ADA by rejecting her request to teach remotely. Now, she was susceptible to COVID. It wasn't a COVID, long COVID case. And she wanted to teach remotely until the COVID vaccine was available. There, the court dismissed the employee's claim because the teacher was a elementary school teacher. And in that situation, the court recognized that actually physically teaching was an essential component of the job, an essential function of the job. So there certainly may be cases and situations where an employee needs to be physically present to teach. The situation might be different if the teacher was not elementary school, but high school or college, where remote learning may be much more effective than certainly it is with elementary school children. So again, it's all going to be fact specific.
John, thank you again so much for your time and all the insight you've provided today. To learn more about John's practice at DeMuro Ginsburg, visit the firm's website at demuro.com. As a note, if you're enjoying these podcasts, please subscribe or follow the monthly Labor and Employment Practice Area series you're listening to right now. Lexis is also offering a monthly practice-specific data privacy podcast, a rotating practice area series, and we are launching an investment management series in 2023. All of these practical guidance podcasts can be found through your favorite podcast provider. And remember, no matter your practice area, if you need practical guidance on how to proceed in your work, check out Lexis Practical Guidance Research Solution. Available now through Lexis. For more information, visit lexis.com. Thanks, and be well.